What's the sound of one fish swimming? The ears of us land mammals were not built to listen to sounds underwater, but it turns out sea creatures occupy a surprisingly rich auditory world. Here to reveal the latest research is Amarina Kingdon, author of the new book, Sing Like Fish, How Sound Rules Life Underwater. Amarina is a science writer whose work has been anthologized in Best Canadian Essays and was named a Best New Magazine Writer from the National Magazine Awards. Here she is to share five of her key insights.
Hi, I'm Amarina Kingdon, and I'm a science writer in Victoria, British Columbia. And today I'd like to share five big insights from my book, Sing Like Fish, How Sound Rules Life Underwater. So the first big insight that amazed me is that the ocean is not a silent world. The ocean has a lot of sound in it. There's wind and waves, there's the sound of currents or waves on coasts, there's rain, even snowfall makes a little sound. There's earthquakes and mudslides and the sound of icebergs scraping the seabed, not to mention all kinds of animals. And we humans just don't realize this because our ears are not evolved to work in water. So we put our head underwater and we don't hear much. And we just think, oh, sound doesn't work here, but that's kind of the opposite of the truth. In fact, underwater sound works differently and maybe even better than it does in air. So first of all, it travels a lot faster. It's about 4.5 times faster in water than air. And sound also moves through water pretty easily and goes a lot further. So seawater density changes with saltiness and temperature and pressure, and that makes these channels and layers where sound can go hundreds and even thousands of kilometers across the ocean. And our other senses aren't great in water. Water is often murky, especially near coasts, and water absorbs light really well. So even in the clearest sea below about 200 meters, you can't really see very much. Touch and taste work about the same, but as for smell, it's carried by chemicals, and those chemicals move slower than they do in air. So if you need to know what's going on around you underwater, sound can be the best channel of information for animals to tap into. The second insight I'd like to share is that sound is not just for whales. Now, the ear, which is an organ specifically for hearing, is just one way to tap into sound. That's because animals have special cells that showed up really early in the history of life. They're called sensory hair cells, and they can detect movement, especially water molecules moving as sound waves pass. And they pop up in ears, but they also pop up in all kinds of organs that detect balance and movement. In fact, there's a really amazing paper from the 1950s that said that any animal that can sense movement or gravity can probably also detect sound. So even tiny animals that don't even have a backbone, like coral larvae, can detect the sound of reefs and move towards it. So they settle and grow in the right place. And there's crabs, lobsters, scallops, mussels, squid, and octopus. All these animals don't have ears, but they can all still pick up and react to at least some sounds. In fact, there's even a shrimp called the pistol shrimp that fights with really loud claw snaps. Now, fish, they do have ears, and they're definitely different from ours, but fish actually evolved the first ear in the water, long before amphibians, reptiles, mammals, or birds ever went onto the land. And today, a lot of fish make sounds for mating, for defense, and they use body parts like their gill arches, they grind their teeth, or they drum on their swim bladders, and many fish even have special structures that make their ears more sensitive. Now, we all know that whales sing, and some whales sing, sure, but whales also make a lot more kinds of sounds. Blue whales and fin whales have calls that are so low-pitched they get picked up on instruments that actually listen for earthquakes. And other whales echolocate, and they use very high-pitched sound that's way above our hearing range. So they use sound to find food and quote-unquote see the ocean around them. And other mammals like seals and sea lions make a bunch of trills and calls underwater as well. And a whole new field of research is looking at how animals like shellfish and invertebrates, they also detect vibrations on the seafloor or in the water just above the seafloor. And we don't hear any of this unless we use special microphones called hydrophones. But when we do, we learn that hearing and making sound underwater is not the exception. It's actually the norm. So the third insight I want to share with you is that for marine mammals, family groups and bonds are everything. And marine mammals define these groups and identities with their sounds. For example, whales use so-called contact calls to keep in touch and keep track of each other over great distances where they just can't see each other. And that's really important to begin with. But one area where this can become really important, like about life and death, is between mothers and calves. So if you think about it, whales don't have arms. They can't hold their babies. But newborn calves still nurse and depend on their moms for food and protection, so they need to stay close. And so mom and calf will murmur these quiet contact calls back and forth so they don't get separated. Now, some species like bottlenose dolphins take ID even further. They have signature whistles, and that's a whistle that's unique to that dolphin, and it lets them tell other dolphins their identity. And dolphins can even call each other by their signature whistles, which is something called labeling, and it's really unique in the animal kingdom, and it suggests really amazing feats of learning. And some species like sperm whales and killer whales can use unique clicks or dialects that define their family groups in areas where a lot of these family groups all mingle together and are found in the same place. And that keeping your family unique amongst the rest of the species is one of the biggest pieces of evidence we have that many whales have what we humans would call a culture. The fourth big thing I'd like to tell you is that underwater, noise from things like sonar, ships, and pile driving can mess with animals in a whole bunch of ways we really never thought of. Because noise is actually a technical term, and it means any unwanted sound that interferes with an important signal. So when we think of harm, we usually think of something really obvious, like an oil spill or blunt force trauma. But once we understand how important sound signals are to animals, we can see how noise makes for a lot of kind of profound problems. So, most obviously, noise can mask whales' dialect or contact calls, but it can also make them spend time and energy running away from the sound. If you think about it, whales don't have, you know, refrigerators. If they want to eat, they need to hunt and forage that day. And when noise sends them scattering, that's wasting valuable time and calories. But noise doesn't just drown out signals. It can have some other more subtle impacts. So cleaner wrasse are fish on some reefs that set up these stations where larger fish come by to be cleaned. It's a symbiotic relationship where the bigger fish gets its parasites removed and the wrasse gets a meal. But when motorboats are buzzing by, the wrasse try to cheat more, take bigger bites out of the client fish, and this can change the whole dynamic. And noise can even cause really subtle damage to animals that we don't even think of. So there were some studies of lobsters exposed to seismic air gun noise. And seismic air guns are these devices that are used for prospecting for oil and gas. And they found that the noise damaged the lobster's balance organs so that they had trouble kind of orienting. So if you turn them over, they'd have trouble righting themselves again. It's not really obvious at a casual glance, but it's really not great for the lobster. And scallops exposed to the same noise, they show changes in their fluid chemistry even months after the exposure. And again, you'd never know if you didn't look really close. But these will almost certainly affect how the animal can live its life in the ocean. Finally, number five is that right now is actually a really critical time for dealing with underwater noise. So noise, especially from global shipping, it's just found in every ocean. Even in the very bottom of the Mariana Trench, you can hear the rumble of shipping lanes. Because remember, sound travels really fast and really far. But to date, there's almost no regulation on this noise. We've been really late to the game in even figuring out how to measure noise properly, let alone control it. But in the next few years, there's a lot of international standards and UN proposals that are coming up for discussion. And individual countries like Canada and a lot of the EU member states are in the process of putting guidelines into effect. So that's going to be especially important. But it's really going to be important in a few critical places: the Arctic and the deep sea. Now, the Arctic Ocean isn't quiet per se, because we know that ice and wind and animals make sounds. But there's not a lot of human noise up there right now. And as sea ice retreats from the Arctic, there's set to be a lot more from shipping and industry. And we just don't know how animals that are used to a fairly pristine soundscape are going to react to that. And as for the deep sea, We know so little about these really remote ecosystems, but we are discovering that in places like deep hydrothermal vents, there is a unique soundscape. And if the rest of the ocean is any indication, the animals who live there are using sound to navigate and eat and orient just like everywhere else. And so as interest in deep sea mining for metals is ramping up, it's going to be really important to understand these soundscapes so that we can make good, meaningful regulation and protection before we intrude into these areas. So these are the five big insights I hope you enjoy exploring in my book, Sing Like Fish. Thank you so much for letting me share. I hope you find the world of sound underwater as beautiful and incredible as I have.
Thank you, Amarina. That was Five Big Ideas from Sing Like Fish, How Sound Rules Life Underwater by Amarina Kingdon. You might also like our book by four, Life on the Rocks, Building a Future for Coral Reefs by Julie Burwald. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.